Rabbi Kahana heads and founded the Jewish Defense League in this country. He's a member of the Knesset in Israel. He is attempting to hold dual citizenship, although the United States would like to deprive him of his American citizenship. On a personal note, Rabbi Kahana and I are just about the same age, born in the same place, Brooklyn, New York, and traveled some of the same streets. Before we go through the Kahana story, I would like you, Rabbi, who was with us briefly earlier tonight on television, there's a story just off the news wires that I might ask you about. Arab American lobbying groups outraged by a suspicious fire at the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee headquarters. And threatening telegrams demanded increased police protection. And the Arab group has said since Friday's blaze, it has received four telegrams, supposedly from the Jewish Defense League, and indirectly claiming responsibility. The telegram said, "Sorry we missed you. Hope to be more precise next time." According to the group, the telegram was signed by Fred Rosenblatt, national director of the JDL. The JDL could not be reached for comment. Do you wish to comment?
Well, you know, I live in Israel, and while I founded JDL, I have no ties with it now. I can only say this, that on a very personal level, and this is just a very personal view, there's no question that these Arab groups are front groups for the PLO. And therefore, on a moral basis, I'm not going to get up and say it's a bad thing. But on a practical basis, I think it's a stupid thing.
So we mean start fires, then?
Absolutely, because that certainly doesn't help Israel. These are groups that will only, you know, turn out to be martyrs. If you want to get the PLO, let's get the real thing. I think that attacking these groups doesn't help Israel, it doesn't help Jews. It's just a dumb thing.
But in the past, earlier tonight, you said that you have resorted to violence in your life.
Of course, yeah.
Is violence ever smart?
Yeah. You see, a Jewish fist has to be attached to a Jewish head. And one of the problems is that for centuries, Jews only had heads and no fists. And I don't want the opposite to become true now, just fists, you know, mindless violence. Violence is sometimes necessary. It's always sad, but it's sometimes necessary. The violence that I committed was against Soviet diplomats. And I want to tell you something, that if today 250,000 Soviet Jews have gotten out of that prison since 1968 when JDL started, and prior to that nobody got out, it's only because of the tragedy that the news media loves violence. And it's violence which put the Soviet Jewish issue on page one. If you send a telegram to Brezhnev, Larry King is not going to get excited about it. I don't mean Larry King as Larry King, but I mean the news media.
Uh-huh.
Now, so,
but it begets it sometimes too, doesn't it?
No question about it. But the fact is that if for 50 years the Soviet Jews were prisoners inside that prison called the USSR, and there was no JDL, and the Jewish establishment groups were doing it their way, which meant quiet diplomacy, which meant nothing. What are we supposed to do after 50 years? How many liberals are upset when South African blacks, after all these years, finally use violence? They understand that sometimes there's no other way, and I understand the blacks.
Reverend, let's find the, you know, we hear so much about you and the statements on the Arabs, and we'll get to that in a while. Let's, since we have some time, learn the Kahana story. You grew up in Brooklyn, New York, went to Yeshiva High School, right?
Right.
What university?
Well, I graduated from Brooklyn College, went on to NYU, and I have a law degree.
And obtained the rabbinate from where?
It's a really world famous school, Shivat Mir. Mir Yeshiva was a European, a very hoary institution, which after the Holocaust came over to America, and I studied there after high school for.
Was your father
years.
A rabbi?
Yes, he was a rabbi in Brooklyn.
Orthodox.
Orthodox.
And you were Orthodox.
Yes.
By choice.
By choice.
And absolute choice. Because an Orthodox home, knowing an Orthodox home, sometimes it isn't choice.
No, by absolute choice. And let me tell you why. I was raised in a neighborhood which was not an Orthodox neighborhood. None of my friends were Orthodox Jews. My friends were either non-Jews or non-observant Jews. And I could have gone easily the other way. I chose to be an Orthodox Jew.
Did you, after becoming a rabbi, did you go to law school, by the way?
Pardon?
Why'd you go to law school?
I was thinking at that time of going to Israel and joining the foreign ministry, and I was thinking that if I had a law degree and a master's in international law, which I have, I might join it. It was only later that I realized that if you're in the wrong party, it doesn't pay.
Did you have a synagogue of your own?
Yes, I had two of them. I had two on the island, which is Long Island. I think that most, you know, Jews tend to live in places that start with a definite article. You know.
We have so far traced a traditional path. The young Jews, well, I guess anyone who have read Chaim Potok's The Chosen might be right in league with Rabbi Kahana's early days, except, of course, the neighborhood was not Orthodox. Where did things start to change? We'll find out in a moment. My guest is Rabbi Meir Kahana of the Israeli Knesset, the founder of the Jewish Defense League. Up to now, it sounds like a very interesting, nice, quiet life. Thought of going to Israel to serve in the ministry. Two synagogues on Long Island, Orthodox rabbi. They may be a dying kind of breed, but there are still many. And I knew many in Miami Beach. What started with the defense? How did that all begin?
Well, I think, as with everything else, it begins much, much, much earlier. I was raised in a very activist home, a Zionist home, a religious home. We knew about the Holocaust. I did when I was 10 years old. And so when I hear Jewish leaders say, well, we didn't know, well, that's just not true. That's just not so. And that, I think, had a great, great impact on me. Around the Sabbath table, every single week, my father would speak not only about Torah, not only about Jewish law, but about Jewish life and what was happening. And so it was an activist home. I joined the Beitar Zionist Youth Group, which was essentially the youth group of the Irgun, of the underground in Israel, in pre-Israel. I was arrested for the first time at the age of 15 when the foreign minister of Britain, Ernest Bevin, came to this country to speak at the UN. Bevin was the person who was sending back, after World War II, after the Holocaust, he was shipping back refugees, Jewish refugees. It was an incredible thing. We attacked his car, and I was beaten up by a cop, and I was arrested. And my father came down, and he said to me, that's the last time you're going to go down to this meeting. And I said, but it's your fault. You taught me this. And he said, you're right.
So you were an activist.
Oh, yes, I was an activist.
How did the idea for the Jewish Defense League begin?
That began when I was... I'd been planning to go on Aliyah, which means going to live in Israel.
This was when you had a synagogue in Long Island.
Yeah, right. And I was also doing work as an editor of a local Jewish paper, a Jewish press in New York. And this would be in 1967-8, and we began to receive letters from Jews telling us things that simply didn't appear in the news media. For example, Jews who lived in inner cities, Brownsville, Brooklyn, Mattapan in Boston, the South Bronx. Horror stories. Fear, muggings. We received letters from Jews who were civil servants and who were suddenly being served up as a sacrificial lamb to quotas and affirmative action. Now, these Jews had become civil servants because they couldn't make medical school, because in the 1930s there were quotas against Jews. And they couldn't become lawyers in those days and engineers. So they had to become teachers. And suddenly you had black militants shouting that the Jews are castrating our children educationally. And I contacted the major Jewish groups, the ADL, the B'nai B'rith, the Jewish Congress and Committee, and said, have you heard about this? And they said, yes. And I said, yes? Well, what are you doing? And they said, well, you know, let's not rock the boat, because let's not make too much of it. So I decided that it was about time that if blacks could form, and rightly so, groups that said that black problems come first, then Jews had to have a group that said, for Jews, Jewish problems come first. Not that there's no second. there's a second, and there's a third, but the Jewish problems come first. And that was the JDL.
Well, how did you call it? Why did you call it the Defense League?
Well, I couldn't call it the Offense League because the Jews couldn't possibly take that. It was bad enough calling it the Defense League. I mean, that brought down on us a rain of
your
terror.
Fame began with the Soviet delegation.
Well,
I mean, that's where you started getting a lot of public attention.
True, but what we really started with was the defense of Jewish neighborhoods. It's incredible to see a neighborhood of old and poor Jews. A lot of people don't know that there are poor Jews. They think that we're all Rothschilds. Well, it's not true. There are some 200,000 Jews in New York City alone who live at the poverty level or below. And they were victims of muggings and of horrors. And we sent people in with patrols in those areas. And we would patrol. And if we saw a mugger, we would teach him a Jewish lesson, thou shalt not mug. And that's what brought us a lot of news coverage. And from then on, we took on the Soviets.
And that, Did you give up the revenant during that period?
Oh, yes. It was just not possible to do both.
When did you go to Israel?
Well, I had been planning to go as early as 1966. I eventually went in 1971.
And established what? Or attempted to establish dual citizenship?
Well, no.
Where does that stand? How
you
does
don't
that
have
work?
To establish anything. This country recognizes the right of any American citizen to be a dual citizen. You can be a citizen of five countries. And there are millions of American citizens who are dual citizens, not just of Israel.
Did you go to Israel in 72 with the idea? I'm
in 71.
71, to live there?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
But you wanted to retain your American citizenship.
Yeah, and there's a reason for that. If I ever gave it up, I know that the American government, for political reasons, would never grant me a visa to come here to visit. And it's important for me to visit here. I have a message for American Jews, and I want to speak on campuses and in synagogues. It's vitally important. I have a message. For example, I think that which happened in Europe could happen here. And I think that people who sit by and say, well, it could never happen here, are fools. Should there be an economic crisis, a real crash in this country? Of course it could happen here. There's an incredible amount of jealousy and envy and hatred of Jews here. So when times are good, people hate Jews quietly. When times are bad, then they hate them loudly.
I don't want to jump ahead, but when we read of statements that, or purported statements that you have made about Arabs, mm-hmm. it would seem that you as a Jew are dividing sects and saying, doing the same thing about hatred. And to spawn hate, no matter what group spawns hatred, whether it's Louis Farrakhan or Meir Kahan or the PLO, hatred is a dumb thing. Hatred, intolerance is dumb. Prejudice is dumb.
Well, I
would
don't
you agree
know.
That that's dumb?
You know, I was a kid during World War II, and they had a special government agency called the OWI, the Office of War. I think it was the OWI. And Elmer Davis was the head of it. And his job was to have Americans hate Germans and Japanese. And he did a great, great, great job. If you don't hate the enemy enough, then you're not going to fight them enough.
Or you hate them as the war enemy.
That's exactly right.
But you don't
right.
hate German people.
That's exactly right.
That would be dumb.
That's right. And I don't hate Arabs as Arabs. I love Jews. And the Arabs are my enemy. And that's why I hate them. But not because they're Arabs. And if tomorrow morning the Arabs would say, we accept Israel as the Jewish state, and we realize that it's the Jews that have to have the political power there, that would be a different ballgame. But that's not so today. And I think that anyone who expects an Arab in Israel to live happily in a state which is called officially the Jewish state, which has a law of return that applies to Jews and non-Arabs, which has a national anthem that speaks of the soul of a Jew yearning, which has a war, which has an Independence Day which celebrates the Arab's defeat, if he thinks that the Arab of Israel loves Israel, he has to have the greatest of contempt for all Arabs.
Well, he may not like the name Israel, but he may have been born there.
He may have been born there, and he wants to stay there in a country which will someday be called Palestine.
Under the same concept, you would have given up your home in Long Island to the Indians because they certainly had better claim on it than you.
That may be so.
So had they asked you to left?
Oh, no. I mean,
why not?
The fact of...
The Indians, they leave. It's all
right. That may be so, and that's a thing to, of course, look...
Could make a case, couldn't it?
That's right, but I'm a Jew, and right now I'm dealing with the Jewish problem.
No, but under the brief, the Indians said everybody on Long Island, Jews, everybody leave, it's all there.
Maybe so, perhaps so, let's look into it. If it is so, then that's right.
You gratefully leave.
That's right. However, I haven't got time now to worry about Indians or Chinese. Let the Chinese worry about the Chinese and the Indians worry about the Indians, because no one isn't worried about Jews except Jews. So I worry about Jews now.
No one's going to worry about Jews.
Absolutely.
You really believe that?
Absolutely. Let me tell you, when people worry about the Jews and when people love Jews, after a Holocaust, that's when we have requiem masses for Jews and plaques, and Jimmy Carter establishes a commission. Well, he can shove his commission because I'm sick of Holocausts. The state of Israel came into being not because Hammond said, I recognize Israel, but because 6,000 Jews died in that war. 1% of the entire people there. 6,000 Jews
died in Israel.
6,000 of 600,000. That's 1% of the entire people that had died. It wasn't the UJHX that saved us. It was fighting, and it was Jews who fought. Well, and I appreciate Harry, Truman, but
how do you feel about
the end,
being,
it was Jews
being condemned so universally by the high political leadership in Israel?
I tell you something. On the day that the high political leadership of Israel or the high Jewish leadership in this country praised me, I stop and say, where have I gone wrong? The fact of the matter is that I have an ideological dispute with them. It's not a political one. The struggle that is taking place today in Israel is between those people such as myself who want to create a Jewish state and those who want to create a Hebrew-speaking Portugal, or preferably America. Well, I don't believe that there's any great reason to create a Hebrew-speaking carbon copy of anything. I want a Jewish state.
You want a religious state?
I certainly do.
Why should there be a religious state?
Because if you don't have that, who cares about being Jewish? What is there Jewish? What is there to this nonsense about being Jewish? When someone doesn't have Judaism, isn't it the height of racism for some idiot to get up and say, I'm proud of being Jewish? What do you mean you're proud of being Jewish? What's the difference between a Jew then, if there's no Judaism, between a Jew and a Finn? That's racism. Now, I'm not a racist, because to me, being Jewish is not based upon the color of his skin, or because Albert Einstein was a great man. What nonsense that is. Can you imagine the idiocy? I'm proud of being Jewish because of Einstein. I'm proud of being Jewish because I believe that God appeared at Mount Sinai and gave us a Torah, which is truth, which no one else has.
But you had nothing to do with being Jewish.
Of course not. Of course not. I don't think that anyone has anything to do with being anything.
Well, a convert to Judaism might be a greater Jew than you.
That's true.
By choice.
No question about that. And I sometimes envy them.
We're going to pause for news headlines, a word from your local stations, and be back with more. Our guest is a comment. Shiite Muslim leader Nabih Berri warned his militia will attack settlements in northern Israel if Israeli troops and their affiliated forces continue to shell villages in southern Lebanon. Berri also held a lengthy meeting Monday with Druze leader Malid Jumblatt in a bid to save their alliance, which almost fell apart in last week's bloody battles in West Beirut. In Beirut, Christian and Muslim militiamen clashed along the city's Green Line battle zone throughout the day with rockets and machine guns and fired shells into residential areas, police said. At least 3 civilians were wounded. The shelling has been targeting the southern villages will force us to retaliate on Israeli settlements, said Berri, who also holds the post of Minister for Southern Lebanon. Berri made the statement after meeting with General William Callahan, head of the 5,700-man United Nations interim force. In Lebanon, there was no immediate reaction from Israeli officials to Berri's warning. What would your reaction be?
If I were the Minister of Defense, I'd eat this Huckleberry up alive. I mean, this... he's a little nothing. I think that what's going on in Beirut is by far the more important part of that story. Every Jew who's upset with Kahana should understand that if the Arabs of Israel would ever take power, they would do to us what they do to themselves every single day in Lebanon. And just think about that. They can't live with themselves. Shiites against Sunni and Druze and Christians. It's unbelievable. Can you imagine what they would do to us? Well, that's not going to happen.
No. Do you think the Israel, the Jew is superior?
The Jew is the chosen people.
What does that mean? There's so many debates on it. Jews debate it all the time. Chosen for what?
What is your problem? A chosen people means that God chose us to give us Torah, the truth.
Now, the message.
That's true. The law.
We're the deliverer of the law.
That's right. We have to, first of all, obey it ourselves. It isn't a game. It isn't some kind of a theory. God is a Santa Claus who's always giving out gifts. It isn't true. There's a law. It's a way of life. Jews have to obey it. Otherwise, there'll be tragedy. There is punishment. There is reward. That's essential to Judaism.
You do not believe yourself superior, say, to a Norwegian or an Arab or a Japanese or a Chinese. You don't think you're better than them.
If only in the sense that I have the truth that they don't have, but my skin is not different than theirs, and my blood is not different, and this vaunted Jewish head. Well, I've met a lot of dumb Jews, and a lot of smart Gentiles. That's not what makes a Jew different. What makes a Jew different is, and chosen, is the fact that he has a Torah, which is the truth.
Why? No. What about separating church and state, though? What place do the two have together at all?
Here?
Anywhere?
Well, there's a great, great difference. In Judaism, very, very much as in Islam, there is no separation of synagogue and state. There are laws involving the Sabbath. And laws in which deal with government. It is a way of life. Every aspect of life is touched by Jewish law. There is no such concept as the separation of church and state, synagogue and state. Now, in America, it's a different ball game. This is a country made up of many, many peoples. So clearly, if it's not separated, you're in for a real clash. And that's why in this country it should be. But in a country which is founded by a specific people, and Israel is founded in a very different manner than this country is, there cannot be and there should not be separation of synagogue and state, because Judaism is founded on the non-separation of any aspect of life.
Why did you run for the Knesset?
Because if you want to get from point A to point B and you have an automobile, it's faster than walking. I'm not a politician. I'm a rabbi who uses politics as a vehicle.
Do you have a synagogue in Israel?
Oh, no. I haven't time for that. My God.
How many times did you run?
I ran and lost in 73. I ran and lost in 77. I ran and lost in 81. And I was rapidly becoming the Howard Stassen of Israel. But if you have a lot of faith and a lot of guts, you win. And I won. And boy, I must tell you something, that Israel has not been the same since July 84.
Do you run the district or countrywide?
No. This is a countrywide thing. And people in Israel don't vote for a person. They vote for a party. And X number of votes elects one person from that party.
The party selects who that person is.
Exactly right.
Your party is the Koch.
Koch.
Koch meaning?
Thus. This is the way.
You're the only member in the Knesset of that party.
This last election, I just made it. Next one, well, if you think that one Kahana drives him crazy, what can 10 or 12 do? Well,
if it's philosophical, if you agree on a lot of things, and it's just philosophical, as you said, why does Kahana drive them crazy?
It's much more
than... We have great philosophical differences in this country. People don't drive them crazy. They vote in the Senate, and you win or you lose.
It's the difference between... No one in this country really, really differs with the image and the dream of what this country is. I differ totally with the leaders of Israel on what Israel should be. What are the Jewish people?
You think it should be a Jewish state totally? All foreigners, all non-Jews should not be there?
No.
Do you believe
that? No. I believe that Israel should be a Jewish state. And any non-Jew who accepts that notion has an absolute right to stay in Israel, but with his personal rights and not his national rights. His culture rights, his economic rights, his social rights, his religious rights.
He could be president of the bank.
Yes, but he can't be president of Israel.
And he can't marry a Jew.
Oh, that's for sure. But that's even in Washington. I mean, that...
You don't think any Jew should marry a non-Jew? Well, no Orthodox rabbi believes that, right?
I would hope that no rabbi... I would hope that no Jew believes it, but that's not... Of course, that isn't true. The Torah says, states clearly that it is a ban. If marriage for the Jew is not because I fall in love with someone, it's so that I can marry someone, raise a family, and pass on the heritage to our children. You can't do that even in a marriage. At the very best, that poor child is some kind of a neuter. Doesn't know who it is, what it is, and then the parents say, well, let him or her grow up and choose. What a horrible thing that is.
You mean love decides religion? I never knew we could base that. I mean, if you walk down the street and you fall in love, man, that happens before you find out what they are.
That's right. And then when you find out that she's not Jewish, you say, baby, I've come a long way, but that's it.
Hard to do, Mayor.
It certainly is. It's not easy to be a Jew.
Our guest is Rabbi Meir Kahana. Okay, what would you like? You want Arabs gone, out of the West Bank. What do you want?
Let me first of all pose the problem. I think it's a terrible thing to say, here's the answer. First of all, what is the problem? It's a tremendous problem. The Arabs of Israel hate Israel. I understand that. They believe that it's their country.
They were born there.
That's right.
It's not a cracky belief.
And here, I have nothing against Arabs. The fact is that I understand them well. But they're wrong, because it's our country. We lived there 2,000 years ago. There is no such thing as Palestine, a Palestine people. The whole concept is insane. The fact is that the name Palestine was created by the Roman Emperor Hadrian 2,000 years ago, when he wanted to wipe out the name, the original name of the state. So he changed it to Palestine after the Philistines. And Judea, which was the original name, was erased, and suddenly it became Palestine. Can you imagine if he hadn't changed that name? And through the ages, it would have come down with its original name. We would now be fighting Yasser Arafat and the Judean terrorists.
Well, what I'm getting at, under that concept, the Indians owned your home in Long Island.
That's your problem.
Well, no, it's your problem,
because
if you don't accept that, I can't accept your principle.
This is your problem.
You gave it the name. The Indians didn't give it that name. The Indians didn't call Long Island. They called it Matatanga.
I'm a Jew.
Well, you weren't there 2,000 years ago either.
That's not, but my ancestors named it.
And the Indian ancestors named him Matatanka.
But my ancestors weren't John Smith.
I mean, you can't have rules for yourself and not for others.
I most certainly can.
Well, I just want you to accept that the Indians have a right to Long Island.
That
and I'll
may
buy
be
you
so, but that's not my problem. Just as it may be true that the blacks have a right to Africa, maybe. It is fine, great. That's not my problem. I don't expect Farrakhan to worry about Israel. Well, I don't worry about Farrakhan's problems, okay? Or the Indians.
But what do you do about the Arab who was born there?
Yeah. The Arab
who
was born
there like you were born there.
You're right. He's a trespasser.
He was born a trespasser?
He certainly was.
Born with trespasser.
Yes, indeed.
Bad kid.
Just by being there, he's a trespasser. Because it was my country. The only country that I have is Israel. That's the only country that a Jewish people, which when it didn't have it, enjoyed the benefits of Christian tolerance, such as crusades and inquisitions and pogroms and Auschwitzes. Well, we've come back to our one country, which was always ours. Not a day went by in 2,000 years that Jews didn't pray three times daily, not to Mecca, as the Muslims do, but to Zion, Jerusalem. And we came back and we found trespassers in our country. Well, they have 22 countries, the Arabs, and God bless each and every one, and may they prosper there, but not in my country. Now, if the Arabs are a majority in Israel, let's say tomorrow morning Yasser Arafat does penitence. He beats his breast and he says, "I have sinned, O God." And he sends out the call to the Arabs of Israel, make love, not war. And every night they make love, not war. Do you know what the Arab birth rate in Israel is? What happens if they live peacefully and democratically with coexistence? Peacefully, saints. How many Arabs would there be in Israel in 10 years, in 20 years?
A lot of people would be alive.
Sure. A lot of people would be alive if you think that I want to live under Arabs.
Why not?
Because...
But you just said that they're loving and they're caring and they're
sure,
trusting.
Sure, until they were the majority. In Lebanon, too, things were great for 30 years until the Shiites and Sunni became the majority.
You think the Arabs are different from you then? I mean, they're born, they want to die and they want to kill and the Israel isn't?
No. They want what they consider to be their country, but it's not theirs, it's mine. Now, 50 years ago, in the 1930s, and 60 years ago in the 1920s, when there was no Kahane around, and no Begin, and no Sharon, or all these fascists, the Arabs massacred hundreds of Jews. Now, there was no Israel even. What do they want then?
You call them fascists, they call you fascists.
Oh, I don't call them fascists. I don't call them fascists. I said that with tongue in cheek.
You should admire Sharon, should you not?
Of course I admire him. Of course. There are things which I do. There are things which I don't. On balance, he's a winner. But the real problem, and I must get back to it, is do the Arabs have a right to democratically vote Israel out of existence, which is what they'll do on the day after they have 61 Arabs in the Knesset, which is a majority.
This is why you want it as a religious state.
Which, first of all, I want as a Jewish state. That's the first thing.
And now, what do you do as a human being about all of these refugees? Well, I mean, what do you do? You can't say I don't care about them. That
God
would not be very
them.
Old Testament.
Oh,
then.
I am. I think that they're brothers. In the following states, Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, and if I had another hour, I would, finish
up. Palestinians should not have their own state.
There is no Palestine, and there's no Palestine people. They are Arabs, part of the Arab nation, and I respect that. There is no Palestine. There is the land
no
of Israel.
No such thing as a Palestinian.
Of course not. The British use the Hadrian term, Palestine. Well, it's Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel. And I don't debate whether Israel has a right to exist or not. There is no way that I am going to see my country go under either to Arab bullets or to Arab babies. I have no intention of seeing the Arabs do to us again what they tried to 50 years ago. So I wish them well. I truly wish them well elsewhere.
We'll be back with Rabbi Meir Kahane of the Israeli Knesset. First, this is a Zionist.
It's someone who dreams of living in Zion and lives there. Most Zionists in this country are friends of Israel and nothing else.
You can't be a Zionist then and live in the Bronx.
Of course not.
You must live in Israel.
Unless you're a fraud, which the American Jewish leaders do a great, great job at. They're essentially frauds.
How do you mean?
Well, let me tell you something. The American Jewish leader has done so much to destroy the American Jew as a Jew. First of all, it is the American Jewish leadership that in the 1940s knew that the Holocaust was taking place.
And spoke to Roosevelt and spoke to leaders about it, didn't they?
Tremendous thing to speak to Roosevelt. The same Jewish leaders who 20 years later would go down to Jackson, Mississippi, into Selma and break the law for black rights, for civil
which
rights.
You agreed with.
Fine, but didn't do anything of the sort in the 1940s when the question wasn't sitting in the back of a bus, but gas chambers, because they were afraid that if they demonstrated and broke the law, what would the Gentiles say about this being a Jewish war? And I want to tell you something, that when I hear Jews attacking the Vatican for not having done enough, or the Christian world, I don't expect anything more from the Christian world.
They had protested militantly But we were fighting the Nazis at the time. What would they be asking for in the street?
The bombing of the railroad lines leading to Auschwitz and the death camps. The bombing of the bridges. The bombing of the gas chambers. That would have saved hundreds of thousands of Jewish lives. And that they didn't do. The second tragedy is the melting pot. That's the 11th Jewish commandment, thou shalt melt. These Jewish leaders, by pushing the melting pot, have guaranteed that generations of young Jews are not Jewish. And that's the tragedy. They are frauds. I don't care whether a country club allows Jews in. I really couldn't care less. That's not the great Jewish battle. The great Jewish battle is, will our children want to be Jewish and have Jewish pride? And I'm not interested in whether money goes to a Jewish hospital. Who needs a Jewish hospital? All people get sick. Let's just have hospitals. But Jewish money should go for Jewish day schools, because that's the future of Jews, unless we don't care about having it. So they're frauds. All the Jewish leaders are frauds.
What does the Jewish Defense League do now?
Well, unfortunately, not too much. And that's a great, great sadness, because it did what I think, great things. It changed Jewish life in this country. As any militant group, it pushed the moderates into doing that, which otherwise they would have never done. And for the last 10 years or so, the JDL has been kind of quiet and still.
You keep in touch with them?
Yeah, yes.
I visit them when you come here?
Sometimes, and you know, at times not. Certainly now with my battle with the U.S. government over
The government says your United States citizenship should be removed. Why? What is the government's contention in the court? What do they say?
They claim that by my having taken my Knesset seat, I have therefore lost it. I claim that there have been numerous Knesset members that have been U.S. citizens who never lost it.
You mean, are they saying that if any American takes a seat in any other government, they lose their citizenship?
They haven't said that. What they said was that Mayor Kahana. Let me give you an example. Moshe Ahrens, the former Minister of Defense in Israel, ambassador of America, was for years a U.S. citizen and sat in the Knesset. The ambassador of Grenada to the U.N. at this moment is a Brooklyn dentist, a U.S. citizen. He doesn't bother America. Kahana does.
Why do you bother America?
Well, first of all,
you're a voice, so you're a one-party voice in the Knesset. Why do you upset America?
I'm a one-party party
voice.
Why do
they care about taking your citizenship?
A one-party party, one-seat voice with polls showing an awful lot of seats in the next election.
Why should that bother us?
Because the U.S. government wants an Israeli government which will be ready to make concessions to Hussein of Jordan land. The next government will not be able to be formed without Kahana. And I can assure you, we won't give up an inch. That bothers America.
How does Kahana view Sadat?
With envy. Clever. What a clever Arab. Incredible. He made Begin look like an Arab. He was incredible. He was a genius. The worst disaster for Israel in years, Camp David. We gave up a Sinai, which was 2.5 times the size of all of Israel, which kept Egyptian troops hundreds of kilometers from our cities. We give oil.
But you got a peace treaty with a nation so much larger than you.
A peace treaty? That's a peace treaty which is a piece of paper which won't be worth the paper it was written on as soon as the Egyptians learned to use the U.S. weapons which flowed to them because of this peace treaty.
Because you don't buy the treaty. You don't think they're going to keep to the treaty.
Absolutely not. And more than that, a country that started 3 wars with me and lost 3 wars doesn't come to me and dictate terms. If you start a war and you lose, you lose. If you want peace, go right ahead. Mr. Baby, it's great. Have peace, but I keep the Sinai and teach you a lesson.
Our guest is Rabbi Meir Kahana.
Yes, Rabbi Kahana. It's been reported that if you had your way, the law of Israel would mandate the death penalty for violation of dietary laws. Is that true or false?
That's false.
Right.
And it was on the, I think, on Nightline that it was said. It's just not true, and I, you know, I can't say that more flatly that it's not true.
The dietary law would be the law of the land, though.
Of course, it would. Yeah.
So you, but if I brought ham into Israel, I could eat it.
If you brought ham into Israel,
no.
We would confiscate it.
Okay, but you wouldn't kill me.
No, God forbid.
All right, for Rochester, New York. Hello.
I want to. Good evening.
Good evening.
I want to make a statement and ask a question.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Hello, Rabbi.
Yes.
I think that the Palestinian have the homeland in Jordan. And if there was a democracy in Jordan, then Mr. Arafat will be the president of Jordan. So it is not the fault of Israel that there is no democracy in Jordan. So what is your opinion about that?
I think you're right. There is no question that certainly probably four-fifths of the people inside Jordan are people who come either from the West Bank or, you know, or Israel. The fact is that Jordan itself is not a legal country. Jordan was part of the League of Nations mandate given to the Jewish people. The British, by fiat, illegally cut off the eastern half of Israel, of the land of Israel, and called it Transjordan. Now, if Yasser Arafat would like to establish a state in Jordan called Palestine, fine. If he wants to do it in Pakistan, in Disneyland, I don't care where, just not in Israel.
With Rabbi Kahana, Springfield, Massachusetts. Hello.
Hello, Larry. Let me first compliment you on digging for rationality. For the rabbi, you have me so confused that I hardly know how to ask my question.
Well,
I'm not confused. Go ahead.
Try.
I'm wondering just what kind of a world would we have if your fondest dreams were fulfilled? Wouldn't you have perhaps every other race subservient to the Jewish race?
No. I would like nothing more and nothing better than Christians to be good Christians and Muslims good Muslims and Larry King a good Larry King. I want Jews to be good Jews. We don't go around trying to, you know, change other people and proselytize other people. And I don't want to rule over anyone else. Just get off my back. That's all.
Thank you very much. With Rabbi Kahana, Brooklyn, New York. Hello.
Hello, Rabbi Kahana, congratulations on being the only rabbi with the courage and conviction to carry out the letter and the spirit of the law.
You must come from Brooklyn.
You know that every Jew in this heart is behind you 100%. These charades where the non-Orthodox beat you over the head with a feather pillow will fool no one but the goyim. Keep up the good work, Rabbi Israel Uber Alles.
Okay.
Israel over Hollis. Now, you're not going to agree with that,
absolutely.
Are you?
Absolutely.
You don't agree with the defamation of Goyim, do you?
Just let's get one thing clear here. I don't want to defame any other people. I simply want my state, a Jewish state, and may God bless all the other peoples who can create the states in their own image. And this concept of Uber Alles, and especially in that particular language,
rather dumb,
like Hitler is not my language.
Goyim is a Jewish slang term for non-Jews.
No. Goyim is a Hebrew word which means nations.
That's all it means. Therefore, if there's a nation of Israel, they're Goyim.
Exactly right. In fact, Jews have been called the holy nation, a Goy which is holy, a nation which is holy.
Louisville, Kentucky. Hello.
Yes, I would like to say that the fact that so many Jews were forced to leave the Arab countries, in fact hundreds of thousands of them, and were never compensated by the Arabs, maybe the solution would be that the Arabs living in Israel will go there in exchange.
That is exactly my point. I have called for an exchange. Not many people know, and this is probably the fault of Israel. 800,000 Sephardic Jews from Arab countries, fled those countries in 1948. They left behind every penny. They weren't compensated for anything. I think that we should exchange. The Jews from the Arab countries came to Israel, to Zion. Let the Arabs leave Zion and go to live with their people.
Our guest is Rabbi Meir Kahana, back after these messages. New York, hello.
Hello, Larry and yeah. Rabbi Kahana.
Yes.
Yes, Rabbi Kahana, first I'd like to say that you're one of the few Jews on this program who isn't pleading for the world to love us.
That's for sure. I don't want love, I want respect.
Yeah. I'd like for you to give your insight as far as the present religious status of the Ethiopian Jews now in Israel.
My view is that of the chief rabbinate, that they are Jews. There is no question about their being Jewish. And the controversy rages around a need to immerse, which has nothing to do with their Jewishness. In fact, just the opposite. If they were not Jewish, the problem wouldn't be so great. In any case, just to sum up, they are Jews, as Jewish as Meir Kahana.
Otto, North Carolina. Hello.
Rabbi Kahana.
Yes.
First of all, I like to say that I like what you're saying.
Great.
I agree 100%. Didn't you at one time say that anti-Semitism was getting to be so bad in America that Jews should leave, go to Israel for their own protection?
I kind of think that there's some kind of zinger kind of coming here. However, yes, I think that all Jews should live in Israel, not so much for that reason, but because it's the home of the Jewish people.
To Toronto, you like America, don't you?
I think that this is one of the great countries of all time. And I think that an American who doesn't realize that really should be, you know, given 15 lashes, because this is such a great, great country. And if I were not a Jew who believes that the home of the Jewish people, in a religious sense, that you must live there, I certainly live here.
Toronto, Canada. Hello.
Yeah, Rabbi, two quick questions. How serious a danger could there be to American Jews if there was an economic disaster from the strong militant black anti-Semitic movement led by Farrakhan, etc.? And can you tell me something about the beginnings of violent black anti-Semitism in New York City, which led to the birth of the JDL around the time of the Ocean Hill Brownsville teacher strike in September 68?
Well, no, I could be here for, you know, hours, really. There is no question that there is really deep-seated anti-Jewish feeling among blacks. Not because they're blacks, but because it's just there. There is no question that I saw that. I lived it. I saw it in Ocean Hill, Brownsville. I saw it in Bedford Stuy. I saw it in the South Bronx. And Farrakhan touches a nerve. He doesn't just talk. He's touching a certain nerve there. Nevertheless, having said that, the ultimate threat to Jews in this country doesn't come from black anti-Semitism. It comes from white anti-Semitism.
Fort Worth, Texas. Hello.
Morning. Shalom, Rabbi.
Shalom.
My question is, if you assume that the Arabs are persuaded or whatever to depart from Eretz Israel, and you could establish a state in conformity with the Torah, what would you envision or desire, like, state policy to be towards Jews who are not adherents of the Torah? You know, secular, agnostic, atheistic, humanistic, even Christian Jews.
Listen, there is no such thing as a, you know, Christian Jew, but everything else is fine. A Jew is a Jew, and I don't care what his views are. I would love to see every single Jew follow Torah. There's no question about it, but a Jew is a Jew. So my, you know, policy towards them would be that, you know, as towards any Jew, certainly in public life, the state will be Jewish. There will not be restaurants that serve food which is not kosher, but no one will check someone's home. The Sabbath will be kept in public. No one is going to check
a religious state.
Home. It'll be a religious state, but only through democracy. Only through democracy. Every 4 years, we will then, you know, have an election. And if the majority doesn't like Kahana, then I'll throw him out.
Bronx, New York. Hello.
I'd like to ask Meir Kahana, why is there such a hatred for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, one of our great presidents, because of a certain situation that took place called the Boat St. Louis, and that he also brought about the United Nations, which brought in and made Israel a state? Correct or not?
Well, I'm going to say, sir, that Most Jews in America would revere the name Franklin Roosevelt. I don't know about Meir Kahana, but I think Franklin Roosevelt, from a Jewish standpoint in this country, is the most popular president the Jewish people ever felt a feeling for.
Well, there is no question that that was so. History is now showing that he was probably a person, the person who had, in this country, the greatest role in burying as much as possible the facts of what was happening in Europe to the Jews. He could have bombed the bridges and the lines to Auschwitz. He was asked to. He didn't do it. He's no hero to Meir Kahana. As far as the UN creating Israel, mister, if the UN hadn't been around, Israel would have still come into being. It came into being through fire and blood. The Irgun and the Haganah, they created Israel, and the UN was not relevant. The British would have left what they called Palestine anyhow, in the belief and the hope that the Arabs would then take care of the Jews. The UN is not relevant. It was Jewish blood and Jewish fire and Jewish power that created Israel.
Dayton, Ohio, hello.
Yes, greetings, Rabbi Kahane.
Greetings.
I've heard you criticized, I believe, unfairly with respect to your views on democracy.
You're right.
How would you see democracy in Israel if you had your way?
The fact of the matter is, and I'll be quite frank with you, Judaism certainly doesn't recognize the Western concept of democracy, but if I were the prime minister, I would never go into a civil war with other Jews. There would be democracy for all the Jews of Israel. I am not ready to give democracy to Arabs who would then use it to wipe out Israel, you know, by the ballot.
But it would be a religious state. It would be democratic, but I couldn't bring Ham in.
That's right. That's right. And
but I could stand on the street corner and say, I think we should bring Ham in.
Yeah, but I would
stop me from doing that.
Oh, of course not. But I would hope, Larry, that after, if you read one or two of my books, you would realize, how can I, as a Jew, do such a thing?
Yeah, you may disagree, but I mean, under your democracy,
yes.
Could he stand on
yes.
the corner and
yes.
say it?
Yes, he could.
Baltimore, hello.
Oh, Larry, I have two questions. Mr. Kahane, you know, of course, of the murder of Mr. Alex Auda, who was the West Coast director of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination
Committee. I read about that in the papers in Israel, yes.
The FBI has indicated they have evidence linking members of the Jewish Defense League to that murder, and Mr. Rubin was quoted as saying that he sheds no tears for the murder of Mr. Oda.
Mm-hmm.
My first question is to you, if in fact the JDL is linked to this murder, do you agree that this is a legitimate purpose of the JDL in the United States?
Earlier on this program, I had said, and I said it clearly, I shed no tears for that either. He was a spokesman and a backer, and a strong backer of the PLO.
He had a right to live, though, didn't he?
Wait. And therefore, I shed no tears. However, it was a stupid thing if done by Jews. It was a stupid thing done by JDL.
Is it stupid to kill anyone?
No. I think that if someone would have killed Adolf Hitler in 1925, he would be sitting now at God's right hand.
But you don't think that we should kill people who speak for the Palestinians in this country or for the Arabs in this country?
I can tell you this, that if the state of Israel could catch a leader of the PLO, which speaks for those people, they certainly wouldn't throw flowers at him.
Charlotte, North Carolina. Hello.
Robert Kahane.
Yes.
How would you explain the strong support you have among the fundamentalist Christian all over the South?
How would I explain that? Well, because...
Is that true, by the way?
Yes, it is. The fact is that I haven't asked for it. But they do back me because they believe in the Bible. And I do, too. And that's the tragedy that...
He's quite some history of anti-Semitism.
Oh, I don't... they back me. I don't back them. The fact is that they sincerely believe that what they call the second coming will not be unless the Jews go back to Israel, the entire land of Israel, defeat their enemies. That's why they back Kahane.
What is Meir Kahane's view of Christ? to you, he is what?
To me, he is certainly not a god, not the Messiah, the symbol of...
Was he a Jewish prophet?
Of course not. He was a Jew, period.
Brooklyn, New York, hello.
Yes, I'd like to speak to Mari Kahana. I would like to ask him how he bases his beliefs upon Torah and Talmud law. I, being as a rabbinical student and in Brooklyn, raised by Orthodox community and studied in yeshivas, find that your views are something against Torah law, against the Talmud, the forbidden fight Goyim. Jews are supposed to accept the ruling of Goyim in exile. Jews are not allowed to have a state of their own before the Messiah is coming. And the Jews are not allowed to antagonize the Goyim. And Kahani, I wouldn't say Rabbi Kahani, because he's not a rabbi and he's not recognized by any other religious Jews as a rabbi, and neither is a teacher, is just practicing the opposite. Kahani was also kicked out from yeshiva in his younger years from Mir Yeshiva. Is that true?
Is that true?
No.
Right, what he says about the Torah, is that true?
No.
No Jewish state until the Messiah?
No. And this person here who makes these flat statements is clearly against the chief rabbinate of Israel, which is a Zionist rabbinate. He's an anti-Zionist. He's part of a small group of people who tragically are products of an exile.
The Torah does not say that.
Of course not. And I'd be happy to send him one of my books, a Torah scholarly book. In fact, if anyone wants it, you can simply write to P.O. Box 425, Midwood Station, Brooklyn, New York, 11230. And ask for any of my books. It just bothers me that someone who gets up and says he isn't a rabbi, the Talmud says that someone who insults a rabbi is an atheist. So be careful about insults. Don't defame. Ask me the question and I'll give you the answer.
New Haven, Connecticut. Hello.
How you doing, Larry?
Hi.
I'd like the rabbi to make a comment on some of the comments I'm going to make, but I wouldn't like a quick little answer that's kind of cute and easy to get over with. I'm a Congregationalist from New England, and some of us within our religion believe that we are the chosen people of God.
Great.
And we believe that this is America, the chosen land of our people. And we, and therefore, I feel that the Jews and Catholics and all other people, in a theoretical sense, should be cast out of this land and treated much the same way as the Palestinians are treated in Israel.
What would you say to this man, sir?
I would say that this country wasn't formed by you. It was formed by all kinds of peoples and all kinds of faiths. The land of Israel was formed by the Jewish people. And that's the tremendous difference. And in the same Bible, if you're a Congregationalist, and if you are, I'm a Swede, but if you would be really, you would believe in that Bible, which speaks about God giving the land to the Jewish people. I don't know where in the Bible it says he gave America to the Congregationalists.
We're going to pause for news headlines, a word from your local stations in a half hour to go, with Rabbi Meir Kahana, a member of the Israeli Knesset and the founder of the Jewish Defense League. The State Department is trying to take away his citizenship. That is in court now. He is also naturally a citizen of Israel, born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. This is the Larry King Show in Washington, D.C., and this is the Mutual Radio Network.
There's one thing that it's a common knowledge that the Jews are the most fierce fighters in the world. I wanted to, if you ever realize...
Common knowledge?
Yes, it's common knowledge among the nations of the world. That's why they've been winning like crazy every which way, and the Bible said they would. But do you realize that because they've got such a fierce fighting name, that these people who oath is recorded in the Library of Congress in America, the Jesuits vow to become like Jews so they can infiltrate into all organizations and become like a Protestant to the Protestants.
Who's that?
The Society of Jesus.
Where in the Library of Congress does it say that? Library of Congress houses every book ever written, sir.
Yes. No,
so therefore you can write any wacko book. Fairfax, Virginia, hello.
Shalom, Rabbi.
Library of Congress.
Shalom.
Yes.
Yes, Rabbi, I'm a Christian, and was wondering, do you know that when Jesus comes back, he's our Savior, he's going to punish you and your people?
For what reason, sir?
For being sons of the devil. The Jews are children of the devil.
Well, then Christ must be.
No.
Well, wait a minute. Was he Jewish?
Was Moses Jewish?
Yes, so was Christ.
Where's in the Bible to say Moses? He was a Hebrew, not a Jew.
Oh, what was Christ?
Christ was from the tribe of Judah.
Well, then, boy, you just put him in big trouble, sir. I hope you can sleep well. Montreal, hello.
Well, good morning. Rabbi Kahana?
Yes.
Yes. I was going to ask you a question here, since you're a theologian. Aren't the Jews and the Arabs both descended from Abraham?
Yeah, and all people come from Adam. I mean, so what?
But aren't you first cousins to the Arabs?
Yeah, they'd be first cousins.
Both Semitic peoples, right?
Yeah, we are Semitic peoples, and so were the, you know, so what? So
well,
what?
And your family.
Yeah.
But I mean, what I'm talking about is more or less both Semites, correct?
Yes, we are both Semites, as are huge numbers of peoples in the world, Semites.
Right. Well, let us hope the situation is cleared up.
Yes.
Thank you. Malena, Illinois. Hello.
Hi. I was reading a book about the ancient Hebrews, the ancient Israelites.
Yes.
You know, according to the book of Isaiah, chapter 7, you know, that they were, you know, that it was required that all the young maidens, you know, the virgins, that they were required by law to get married because, you know, because
what's the question, sir?
Because they were supposed to be the mother of the Messiah. Is this practice still in observance?
Where in the world in Isaiah in chapter 7 do you come with that thing?
Bethesda, Maryland, hello.
Yes, there was this group out in Torrance, California that was destroyed in an arson attack last year, and this was a group of people who published articles and writings questioning the extent of the Holocaust. I was wondering, number one, I know that the JBL applauded this act, but do you know if they were directly involved? And number two, what is your view about perpetrating violent acts on people who deny that the Holocaust happened or question the extent of it?
First of all, let's get one thing clear. As I heard of it, the building was attacked. No one was injured. No one was destroyed. No one was killed. Nothing of the sort. In general, I say that violence is a terribly dangerous thing, and while at certain times it can be used, and indeed must be used, and should be used, and this Saturday night we again will celebrate a Jewish holiday, which commemorates the Maccabees fighting the Greeks, and they didn't throw flowers at them. In World War II, we didn't throw flowers at Germans. So sometimes violence is terribly necessary. I don't believe that it is necessary, and I don't believe that it is smart to simply use violence against every person that you differ with.
Thank you to Brooklyn, New York. Hello.
Hello, I'd like to ask Rabbi Kahana, what does he think about this guy who gets on the radio, Dr. Mohammed Mahdi, this comedian? He has even condemned his own people, Arab country, Egypt, for storming the plane in Malta against terrorism. What does he think of him?
He's a clever guy. He hates Israel, but he's a really clever guy. I mean, don't underestimate Mehdi. He isn't a comedian. He's a sharp guy. And he's a dangerous person. Now, he doesn't really condemn Arab terror, but it sounds good coming from an Arab saying that.
Oak Beach, New York. Hello.
Good morning, Larry and Rabbi Kahana.
Morning.
The question is on this Alex O'Day that was killed in the bombing in Santa Ana, California.
Mm-hmm.
He was an Arab-American.
Mm-hmm.
And a spokesman for this Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee,
right, which is
analogous to the Jewish Anti-Defamation League.
Hardly, but go on, continue.
Well, he's a spokesman.
Yeah.
Now, if I read you correctly, a spokesman is fair game for violent attacks, even though he's not armed and even though he's law-abiding.
You don't read me correctly.
Well, you say you shed no tears. No tears.
Yeah, right. I shed no tears, but I also said it was a very stupid thing.
You think it was an act of terrorism?
I don't know what it was. I don't label. I said it was a stupid act which didn't help the Jewish people. It didn't help Israel.
Well, your views seem to reflect the ancient rule that might makes right. Whoever has the most brain power, the most manpower, and the most firepower is going to prevail.
Well,
and that doesn't necessarily mean the most righteous are going to win.
I mean, clearly, either I can't speak English or you don't understand it. I just finished saying that particular action was a stupid action.
Why do you shed no tears?
Because he was a spokesman for the PLO, and a strong spokesman for the PLO, a man who did his best in this country to paint a good image of an organization that murders Jewish women and children. That's why I shed no tears for that kind of a person.
Back after a couple of upcoming words for Olivia, broadcast media in Israel. Why?
It's, of course, it's state radio and TV, and they bar me. It's that simple. They simply stated that I cannot appear, and we have a copy of that directive.
Washington, D.C., hello.
Hi, two quick questions. Do Arab lobbyists deserve the extra protection that they've asked for in light of the... of now the three bombings in the last year? And the second question is, what is your opinion of the Jewish Defense Organization and Mordechai Levy in particular?
I think that if the government, if the police feel that there is a threat to anyone, then that person has a right to a protection, of course, certainly. As far as... as your other question, it's a Jewish group, and I wish all Jewish groups well. I only hope that Jewish groups will always use a Jewish head along with a Jewish fist.
To Medina, Ohio, hello.
Well, now, if we're going to use your analogy, would you say that Zionist organizations, which have really supported the killing of probably 1,000 times more civilians than the PLO has ever killed in their invasions, which are always called war, retaliation, and defense,
mm-hmm.
that they would get exactly what they deserved, that the same fate befell them that befell this American Arab who was bombed, apparently by the JDL, even according to the FBI, this is a very real possibility. Obviously, you're not going to admit this to create problems for your organization.
For sure.
If it's going to be any way consistent, I think then this grotesque analogy would apply also to them. In both cases, I think it's very grotesque.
All right, let the rabbi comment.
I don't know where you've lived for the last 50 years, but the fact is that long before Jews attacked Arabs, the Arabs were murdering Jews, not only in Israel, but anywhere else. Jewish synagogues have been attacked in Italy, in England, in France. Terror has been done here in this country by Arabs. So don't say that if the Jews do it, then Arabs can also. They started it. They hold a patent on terror.
To Paducah, Kentucky. Hello.
Yes, Rabbi. Assuming that you are a theologian in your holy writings, according and. In reference to Isaiah 53,
yes.
Why does that not pertain to Christ? And second question, going aside or going beyond the fact that we believe in a second coming of the Messiah, and you see the Messiah as coming for the first time, what differences through Isaiah, like in chapter 59, chapter 49, and in 30 and 32, is a difference in a millennium reign or a setting up of the Messiah's kingdom on earth?
One, the chapter on the servant, servant in chapter 53, a suffering servant chapter, that applies to Israel, the people of Israel, and not to Jesus. That is Jewish teachings. The Jews believe that the Messiah has not come yet, that he will come, and that he will bring God's law, Torah law upon earth. What bothers me is that why don't you leave us alone? You have so much work to do among Christians to make them decent Christians. Leave Jews alone. Do I bother you? I'm busy making Jews good Jews. Why don't you just make Christians good Christians and let us live happily ever after with respect and tolerance one onto the other?
Pleasant from California. Hello.
Hi. I've been doing a little studying of the Bible, and according to what I've learned, it says that God is just a title, but that there is a personal name of God, and that it was written over 7,000 times in the Bible. And it's represented by four letters, four Hebrew letters. And it said that due to superstition, they stopped using the name. And I was wondering if you could tell me when did they start discontinuing the use of this name?
Yahweh, I mean?
Yeah, or Jehovah, and why did they stop using this name?
First of all, it didn't stop. It didn't start. The Jews, out of a deep respect and awe, did not use God's personal name ever, except in the Holy Temple, on the holiest day of the year. That was the only time that it was ever used. So nothing has ever changed.
That tradition?
It's law. It's law.
God didn't want his own name used.
It's the kind of... I don't believe that you would call your father by his first name.
No.
It's the same concept here.
To Rochester, New York. Hello.
How you doing, Larry?
Hi.
I'm an Arab American, Palestinian, third generation, and I'd like to ask two questions. I have about one of his comments about why no Palestinians. I'm a Palestinian American.
Mm-hmm.
I always call myself a Palestinian. My grandfather's a Palestinian from.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came over, he told me, never forget you're a Palestinian. And another thing about Israel's arrest and illegal detention of Mr. Mike Mansour. He's an Arab American who came over to Israel and visiting his family in Deir Deban, and he was taken to the Ramallah military prison.
Mm-hmm.
And forced to sign a confession written in Hebrew, which he doesn't understand, and he was also physically and psychologically abused by the Israeli military. I'd like you to comment on that, please.
On your second question, of course, it's all nonsense. It's all lies. So he was of course tied in with the PLO. He arrived in Israel to do work for them. He was given a fair trial, an open trial, which was done in Arabic, not in Hebrew, as all of the trials are in Israel for terrorists. That's the first thing. That takes care of Mansour. As far as Palestine is concerned, I'll say it again. The name Palestine was invented by the Roman Emperor Hadrian after the Philistines.
Yeah, but this caller is a Palestinian.
He wasn't a Palestinian until the 20th century when they suddenly arose and said, hey, we are Palestinians. I have no quarrel with him saying it, but the fact that someone says it doesn't mean it's true.
You're telling him he's not a Palestinian.
I'm saying he's an Arab, and I respect him for it. And you are a member of a proud nation, the Arab nation, which stretches from Morocco to Iraq, and may you live anywhere in that area except in Israel.
We'll be back with our remaining moments with Rabbi Meir Kahane in these final 10 minutes. We'll try to draw him out and get some opinion here. The man really goes down the middle. But, for Rabbi Kahane, hello.
Hello. Rabbi Kahane?
Yes.
Yes, I'm calling from Toronto, and I converted to Orthodox Judaism about 16 years ago. I first caught you on the David Subkind show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You really tell it like it is. Coming from the other side, I see many things that perhaps the Jew himself does not realize. Up here in Canada, we had some very prominent businessmen sponsor the Santa Claus parade and close to $1 million for it, which could have gone to Israel. These are the sort of things that bother me. And the fact that they run you into the ground, you who doesn't sit on the fence, like a lot of them, who tell it like it is, I'd like to know something. Where can we... If we want to help you, give us an address. There are many of us who would like to. How can we help? What can we do? The first Jewish Defense League speaks for itself. We're defending ourselves.
First of all, you can help me by attempting to change the decision of the government of Canada barring me from entering the country. I am barred from Canada.
What can we do?
Well, you can certainly write to Ottawa and demand that it be changed and know that it was the Canadian Jewish Congress which was,
yes,
you know, back of it.
And this is our own worst enemy here.
Yes, indeed. And you can write to P.O. Box 425, Midwood Station, Brooklyn, New York, 11230.
That's, and they can write to you in your name.
Oh, yes.
It's Rabbi Meir Kahana, Box 425, Midwood Station, Brooklyn, 11230. Palestine, Oklahoma. Hello.
How about that?
Two questions. In your eyes, do white racists also have the right to guard their genes zealously against non-whites? Two, do they also have the right to form their own religion, even if it exposes the Jewish Christian hoax?
Every imbecile has an absolute right to be that. Now, if you believe in white genes and you're an imbecile, if you believe in black genes and you're an imbecile, but you have an absolute right to be exactly that.
And to form any religion you want. Stillville, Missouri. Hello.
Well, I'm a member of the Alternative Party, which is advocating the withdrawal of all support from Israel because Israeli Nazis like Kahani and Begin and Sharon
are
terrorists, and they're attempting to terrorize any American here in America, given the same treatment that you've given the PLO, which is murder, rape, and robbery, and imprisonment, and do away with the Christians here in America, just as you've done to the PLO. And it's unbelievable the way the government, the Reagan administration, and the Democrats put up with you people, allow you to become dual citizens, continue this reparations hoax. Because of the Holocaust, the alleged Holocaust.
You say alleged Holocaust, sir?
Yes, he did.
Okay, good night. Campbell, California. Hello.
Good evening, Larry. Good evening, Rabbi.
Good evening.
I would just like to point out to the Rabbi that in spite of the fact that he purports himself to be so, he is not a spokesman for the entire Jewish people.
Who is?
Who is?
Yeah.
I believe that our Torah is.
Well, fine, but what person is?
I don't think that there is one person.
Good, fine, okay, good. Well, that
I believe that you're. I believe.
Well, that puts me in their class.
I don't believe so. I think that there are a lot of Jews that disagree with what you stand for.
Sure, of course.
I think the great majority of Jews do.
That may be so.
I'm one of those who happens to share the opinion that you are a dangerous person, and that is why you are being barred from the country you're being barred from.
Let me just ask you something. If everybody who is thought to be dangerous would be barred, your turn might be next.
Your logic is correct. However, I think that the track record has shown with some of the comments that you've made, and I will admit that you're on good behavior tonight. You're not yelling at anyone.
I never yell at people who don't yell at me.
Rabbi, I heard you yell at Dennis Prager for approximately an hour on the phone in Los Angeles.
I don't know where you were, and I don't know.
To a radio station, a show called Religion on the Line.
The next time, lower your volume. I've never been on that program, ever.
Thank you. New York City, hello.
Hello, this is Rabbi Kahane. This is your friend, Dr. Muhammad Mehdi.
Dr. Mehdi, I am proud of you.
How are you doing?
How are you, my friend?
We have on a number of radio and television stations together.
Yes, indeed.
You are there alone. That's not quite kosher.
Dr. Mehdi, anytime you would like to be on the on the Larry King show with me, I'll be happy to ask him.
Tell us who this is.
This is Dr. Mehdi, the famous Dr. Mehdi, one of my closest friends. Unlike Jewish leaders, he appears with me on the same radio program.
Exactly, because you and I can exchange meaningful ideas, and still I say you are the most decent of all the Zionists. The ADL is a potential JDL. Would you agree?
Well, I would certainly hope so.
Absolutely. Rabbi, I want to invite you to come and appear on my television program in Manhattan, and wish to invite you to luncheon at the United Nations.
Dr. Mehdi, I accept it. I accept it. More than happy to. Some of my best friends are of course Arabs.
I have heard that fact by Auntie Summer.
It's just a joke, Doc. Come on, Doc. Doctor Ben. It's just a joke, of course.
And listen, you are friends.
Oh, we are deep friends. We have.
Rabbi Kahan and myself have exchanged these issues possibly the most meaningful way that you can ever have. Sorry that you didn't have both of us. It might have been even a more meaningful program.
Yes, ma'am. I ask you if you respect Dr. Kahane.
Yes, I think Rabbi Kahane is more intellectual, more consistent, more decent even than Erv Rubin, and of course than the leaders of the Jewish organizations here. Rabbi Kahane is consistent in his logic, intellectually he is far head and shoulder above these hypocrites. The rest of them.
What can I possibly say to that except that every word is really true?
Exactly.
What a way to finish off the hour. Rabbi, thank you very much for coming. You're going back to Israel when?
Sunday.
And the court case is determining the citizenship situation will be settled when, do you think?
Hopefully in about 2 or 3 years.
As they say in the parlance of the criminal lawyer, tie it up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our guest has been Rabbi Meir Kahane. Again, if you'd like to write to him in this country, it's Box 425, Midwood Station, Brooklyn, 11230. This is the...